Raidieraksts drošinātājs. Labdien, Alla!
Labdien, divs!
Es par jums uzzināju no vienas klausītājas, kur atrakstīja, ka tad, kad viņi viesojās Kīvā kara muzejā, pie viņas esot pienākusi kāda gide, kura sadzirdēja, ka viņi runāja latviski, un esot uzrunājusi šos latviešus, kas viesojās Kīvā, latviski. Un pat esot ukrainieti, un tad es jūs sadzinu rokās, un te nu mēs tagad runājam. Alla, jūs esat ukrainieti, latviete, pa pusē ukrainieti, pa pusē latviete. Kas jūs esat un kā jūs zināt latviešu valodu?
Jā, es esmu pilnīgi ukrainieti.
Un kā jūs iemācījāties latviešu valodu?
Es varu parunāt mazliet un es sapratu kaut ko. Tāpēc, kad es mācījos skolā, man bija klases biedrs no Latvijā. Puika no Latvijā un mēs sēdējām kopā pie viena galda.
Jā.
Tā es sāku saprast latviešu valodā. Jā. Tā bija... par gadiem no 98 un līdz 2004.
Wow, 6 gadu laikā sēžot blakus jūs iemācījāties latviešu valodu.
Jā, par 6 gadu. Man bija 8 gadus tad. Aha. No 8 līdz 14. Yes.
Tas ir ļoti interesanti, pareizāk pārsteidzoši pat, un vēl pārsteidzošāk ir tas, ka visus šos gadus vēlāk jūs vēl aizvien varat runāt latviski.
jā. Mana izglītība ir valodniece. Es esmu angļu valodas tulkotājs un arī ukraiņu valodas redaktors.
Jā, redaktors.
Jā, tā ir mana izglītība. Un arī mana bērnība, 2000 gadu beigas, grupā Brainstorm.
Jā.
Prāta vētra bija ļoti populāra Ukrainā. Tā bija no vidu, in the middle of 2000.
2000. Gadu vidu.
Jā. Toreiz viņi dziedāja pārsvarā angliski. Viņi tika uztverti kā rietumu grupa. Bet pēc tam viņi vairāk pārgāja uz krievu valodā. Un interese par viņiem Ukrainā, saka, mazināties, and they were not so unique as in English. Also, that was a very popular song, Colder. Their music video for this song, it also was taken in Kyiv.
Yes.
At that time, so. And we recognized some locations of this music video and so on. But es zinu, ko tagad viņi atbalstīt Ukrainu. Tagad. Arī dziesmā mans draugs tagad ir ukraiņu valoda.
Bet šī te latviešu valodas zināšana, kā ir ietekmējusi jūsu dzīvi?
Es strādāju otrā pasaule kara vēstures muzejā. Es esmu gids. Mums ir daudz apmeklētājs no visu pasaulē. Rēti, kad latvieši atbrauc uz mūsu muzejā, negaida, ka kāds ar viņiem runās latviski. Bet ja es dzirdu, ka cilvēki runā latviski un viņi vēlas pārunāt, es vienmēr priecājos ar viņiem runāt. Man šī ir iespēja atsvaidzināt zināšanas. Tikai man prieks runāt latviski, tāpēc es domāju, ko tā ir ļoti skaista, ļoti mīksta, mūzikāla valoda, ļoti interesanta.
Cik daudz par Latviju Ukrainā zināja līdz pilnu mērogu iebrukumam? Vai par Latviju tagad zin vairāk, ņemot vairāk, ka Latvija mēģina darīt, cik mūsu spēkos ir, lai atbalstītu Ukrainu?
Of course, I read news, Ukrainian news, and so since I know Latvian language, so from time to time I read Latvian news, and es klausos Latvijas radio ļoti žēl, bet šajā nežēlīga kara, ja latvieši arī krīt. We know that in October 2023. So Vitaly Smirnov's. So he was killed in Bakhmut. So just 2 days ago, I read that another Latvian, Edgars Platonovs, was killed in Ukraine, Lugansk region. He was killed on a Christmas on the 25th of December, 2024. So, of course, we understand that that's also the price, the highest price for Ukrainian freedom and for the freedom of all the Europe and all civilization. But also Latvians support Ukrainians very much. And different volunteers, volunteer organizations, and on the state level also, officially Latvia support Ukraine, and we know Latvians as our true friends in this war.
Have you been to Latvia?
Yes, I've been to Latvia once. It was 2011. 2011, and that was, you know, like my first time abroad.
Oh, really?
Yes,
how do you remember the trip?
No, tā bija nedēļu vai piecu dienu ture. Es dzīvoju Rīgā, Čaka iela. Tā bija maza viesnīca, Čaka iela, krustojums Dertrūdes iela un Čaka iela. Bet katru dienu viesojos dažādas Latvijas pilsētas, nu, piemēram, Bauska, Sīgulda, Jūrmala, Jelgava, no kurieni prata vētra Jelgava.
Jā, jā.
Nu, es biju pārsteigts. Yeah, because of course Latvians are known also as a former part of the Soviet Union. And of course, I was just very impressed, and I was so surprised at how different this country, how different this people, and how it could happen that for so many years they became a part, how they could, to conservate and to preserve such identity after long years of Soviet Union.
Is it the case that after the 2014 invasion of Crimea, Lugansk, part of Lugansk and Donbass, and even more after the full-scale invasion, that Ukraine as a nation is going through some changes of self-recognition, that you have your own culture, you have your own language, you have your own traditions, and that you must be proud of them, while before maybe you were under the Russian influence more? It's like maybe what you saw in Latvia, that we have preserved all this even after being occupied by the Soviet Union, that Ukraine wants to go the same route now. I don't want to put any words into your mouth, but I'm just thinking now. Are there any similarities in that sense?
Yeah, of course, Ukrainians and Latvians are quite similar for me. Yeah, and also and even now in this ongoing Russian-Ukrainian war, they understand us better comparing to some other countries, because they experienced the same repressions of Soviets. And after Second World War and during Soviet period and so on. And Latvians also, they wanted to be independent, as well as Ukrainians wanted this. Also, Ukrainian identity had been kept even during the Soviet time, but it was just prohibited to speak about it. Representatives of Ukrainian national movement, they were repressed, they were jailed, as well as in Latvia. And also, as Latvians had a Meža brali. Yeah, Meža brali. So in Ukraine, we had Ukrainian insurgent army, so which were fighting against Soviets, and many years after the end of the Second World War, and many of them were killed by Soviet agents, and many of them had spent the rest of their lives in the Soviet and then Russian jails and so on. And also deportations. When Soviet government came back in the end of the Second World War, so people who didn't want Soviet authorities and the Soviet rule, Soviet occupation, so these people were repressed and they were sent to Siberia. And it was experienced and by Latvians and by Ukrainians and by other nations who lived under Soviet regime.
Well, when we speak about history, I want to use this chance and talk to you also about the museum where you work.
Yeah.
Many of our listeners may not have been to the Museum of War in Ukraine, but they most definitely have seen the huge statue of a lady over the city, and that's where you are, right?
Yes, yes. So that's one of the highest monuments, not just in Ukraine, but also in Europe. So that is a monument Motherland. The total height of this monument, 102 meters. So it's higher than Statue of Liberty. In the United States, for example, and as you remember about the Cold War, of course, the Soviets wanted to build something bigger than Americans had. Also, monument is quite heavy. It's almost 500 tons. And the process of building was quite long, for 7 years, from 1974 till 1981. And now under this monument is the main exhibition of our museum. So our museum, so National Museum of the History of Ukraine in the Second World War Memorial Complex, is one of the biggest historical military museum on the territory of Ukraine. So we have a huge collection of original exhibits. So collection of Second World War consists of more than 400,000 original exhibits. And since the beginning of Revolution of Dignity, since 2014, museum started to collect items about 21st century, about ongoing time. So from about Russian-Ukrainian war, we have more than 21,000 original items. So it's absolutely different exhibits, such as and also uniform, personal belongings and weapon, different kind of documents, pictures, and so on.
In Latvia, the War Museum is a place where every school kid is taken to see how their ancestors once fought for our country. And it's really about past, of course, with lessons for today. But what role does the War Museum currently play in Ukraine at the time when there is actually full-scale war going on?
The activity of our museum is very multitask. So it's not just education of people about the past, but also it's necessary to illuminate all the events which are going now on Ukrainian land. I work in an educational department, so Estradaю Izglītības Nodaļa. I provide tours every day, so my department, so that the employees who always in contact with visitors, and we represent the exhibitions. We represent exhibitions of museum. But also another part of museum work, so that is a research, and that is a documentation of ongoing war. And it's necessary to say about museum expeditions. So our general director, Yuri Savchuk, after liberation of Ukrainian lands, he go to the expedition and he tried to collect items for new exhibitions. For example, speaking about Kyiv region, it was liberated on the 2nd of April, 2022. And on the third day after liberation, on the 5th of April, 2022, the first museum expedition went to deoccupied villages and towns of Kyiv region and Chernihiv region, and items for exhibition Ukraine Crucifixion were collected. But collecting the items is just a small part of museum work, because it's also necessary to make a photo documentation during the expedition. And also we collect oral history, so oral testimonies. we are in contact and we communicate with the witnesses of all events. It's very important for us to come as quickly as possible. So when people have very fresh memories, when people remember, you know, all the events, all the actions, and they could give us testimonies. And we collect also these memoirs, and we try to share with our visitors the experience of the heroes of Ukraine and civilians which were under occupation and so on.
How is it for you on a daily basis when you work in the museum? You're the one of the persons who speaks to the visitors and tells them information about the exhibition, about some items that you can see and history. But aren't there cases when some active soldiers come in, or some war veterans come in, or some volunteers come in that who also have their stories, and you are like, now I have to stop talking and start listening to you, because that's a new evidence of war, and maybe we have to write down or film it. Have there been such instances for you?
Of course, there are many different visitors among those people who are coming to museum, and not just civilians, but sometimes it could be also when the soldiers, especially those who are, for example, on a rehabilitation. So when they are on a rehabilitation somewhere in Kyiv, and if they have a free time, so sometimes they could visit our museum. And that was also one occasion when I met American volunteer fighters. So that was in May 2022. It was just my regular working day. And I saw that young guys entered the museum, and they were speaking English. They were Americans. And I saw that they had injured legs, and I started to talk to them. So we found out that they are volunteer fighters who are on rehabilitations. We were in touch, and they donated to us their belongings from the Zaporizhia direction, from the battle in the area of Orikhiv, where heavy battles were at the time. And they became the heroes of our exhibition. So yeah, in summer 2022, we had exhibition about Americans who are fighting for Ukraine during this war. Yeah, so just from visitors, they became heroes of exhibition.
I looked at the Facebook page of your war museum, and I saw that Tochka-U rockets,
yes,
and different kind of equipment being brought from the scenes and to the museum. How is the process? Do you try to collect everything you can?
You see, in our museum, so there are more than 260 employees, and we have a such department in museum which is called conservation collection department. So mostly that is their task, you know, to collect and to preserve items. But museum try to collect as more as possibly, because you never know what item could be unique,
right,
or what item could be needed. There are some items which can be kept in the collection, not in exhibition, but in collection for 10 years, for 20 years. But in some certain moment, this item will give to exhibition when we have the, you know, some topic, and this item can illustrate and underline a topic. So that's why sometimes it takes a very long time, and it is a very long way from conservation, from the collection of museum to the museum showcase. So that's why we need, usually we collect everything which we believe could be useful for museum.
I know that the Latvian Ukrainian war museums have cooperated before. Could you talk about that?
First of all, I would like to say about the Latvian embassy in Ukraine. Actually, they are located not far from our museum, And so when they have delegations, when they have guests, so very often they come to visit our museum. So Latvian Embassy is one of our also true friends of our museum. And I speak about Latvian ambassador Ilgvar Skljava and also defense attaché Pulkvedis Aleksandrs Holmanovs. And by the way, Pulkvedis Colonel Holmanovs, when he come to our museum, he speaks Ukrainian because he's trying to learn this. And it's also, you know, kind of a Ukrainian-Latvian bridge between us.
Yeah, so you speak Latvian and he speaks Ukrainian.
Sometimes we try to speak like that. Yes, and another cooperation of our museum and Latvia, so that is a cooperation with Latvia Skara Museis, Latvian War Museum, and I want to say hi to Kristina Skriver, the general director of Latvian Museum, and that was idea of Kristina Skrivere to make exhibition Sinja par Ukrainu, Battle for Ukraine. Yeah, so that was a kind of a very successful cooperation of our museum and Latvian Museum. So this exhibition consisted of items which were collected during museum expeditions to Kyiv region, Chernihiv region, and also liberated Kherson, such unique items as uniform, also Russian propaganda, Russian different postcards, leaflets, posters, letters. They were represented in the Latvian War Museum. And this exhibition, Battle for Ukraine, Cynia par Ukrainu, it was open on the first anniversary of the beginning of full-scale invasion. So it was on the 24th of February 2023. And this exhibition was very important and for us and also for Latvian War Museum, because that was the first exhibition. It was the first stationary exhibition about full-scale invasion, which was presented behind the borders of Ukraine in Europe. Later, we had this exhibition in Estonia, in Slovakia, in United States, but Latvia was the first country in Europe behind the borders of Ukraine where exhibition about full-scale invasion was presented.
So let me ask you about your museum right after the 24th February. We know now what happened to museums in the occupied territories. They were looted, vandalized, and otherwise damaged. At the beginning of the full-scale invasion, as we remember, the Russian forces were actually on the outskirts of Kyiv. What happened at the museum at that time? And did you try to evacuate most valuable items, or what happened to the staff of the museum?
On the eve of full-scale invasion, a plan of evacuation for museum was adopted. So when full-scale invasion started on the 24th of February, our employees, which were in the list of responsible for evacuation, they were obliged to come to museum and to provide this evacuation. And exhibitions of museums, so they were dismantled and items were hidden to safety places. You understand that nobody gave a guarantee that Russians wouldn't come into Kyiv. It's one of the first exhibitions which was dismantled and items which were evacuated. That was items about Ukrainian rebel army, so Ukrainian insurgent army, because you know that Russians, so they are crazy about this different stereotypes about Stepan Bandera, and we heard items about him, about the representatives of the national movement, their personal letters, items, leaflets, and so on. So that's why these items, they were evacuated. And also, at that period, in our museum, we had absolutely unique temporary exhibition about Ukrainian Revolution from 1917 till 1921. This exhibition was called Forever Free Ukraine, and that was a Ukrainian-American exhibition, so part of the items belonged to United States. So that's why it was necessary to evacuate this exhibition, because belongings didn't belong to us. Our general director, Yuri Savchuk, so he personally, by his personal car, so he evacuated these items to the west of Ukraine. And later, this exhibition, Forever Free Ukraine, in September 2022, it was opened in Kaunas, in Lithuania.
And what happened to you? Did you still come into work? How do you remember the first days of the war?
No, I was not involved into this evacuation, so I was not obliged to come to work at the first day of invasion. But many of our workers continued to work, and if it was possible to make online work, so we did it. So initially, the museum was closed for visitors, and it was open on the 8th of May, 2022. For visitors again. So till May 2022, museum was closed, but our workers continued to work. So we did the necessary work. And our general director, actually, he lived in museum. He moved from his apartment, he moved to museum, and he spent there 24 hours, as well as our other workers. Some other workers with families moved to museum because we have a shelter there, and they felt themselves safety in museum. So I know that five families of our workers, they lived under a monument. Yeah, so speaking about me, as I work in educational department, so I had to make online work. So every day on the our web page of museum, we described the chronicle of war, so what was happening on different directions, and I translated this text into English. And then when school children came back to education, but it was only online education, so I provided online lessons about ties and connections of Second World War and ongoing war, because that was a spring. Many Ukrainian school children, they had to pass exams in summer. Yeah, so that's why that was necessary to continue our educational work. And as at school exams, usually we have many questions about Second World War. So we continued our online lessons, and that was very crucial. That was very important for school children, which appeared around all the world. So, for example, I had such online lessons when teacher was sitting, for example, in Germany, children were in Poland, United States, Spain, and that was an online lesson when we could gather all together.
Now the Russian forces are not in outskirts of Kyiv, but the rockets still fly in, the drones still fly in. It's not safe in Kyiv, of course. How is your life as just a regular person in living in Kyiv?
So, of course, when you live under condition of ongoing war, even not on occupied territories, and it's not a territory which is very close to front line, but we say that there is no safety place in Ukraine. So that's why life is always kind of unpredictable. So you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. But despite all this, I can say that personally speaking about me, maybe I became more organized or even more scheduled. It's connected also not just with the alerts, but also it is connected with the shortages, because we had, so for example, this week we do not have, but for example, in the end of December, we have very tough shortages of electricity. So you always have a power bank, you always look your phone and your laptop to be charged. And for example, I can say that I started to listen radio more often, because for example, when electricity disappear and internet disappear and cell connection go away and alert do not work outside, so the only way to hear alert, so that is just a simple radio. Also, speaking about Latvia, if I mentioned the shortage, volunteer organization, Uzņemēji Mieram, so they donated to our museum a minivan, which is also very important for us because we can use it during museum expedition and in everyday work. Also, from Latvian volunteers, we have a generator in museum. And as it is a very big territory and we have a few objects, we have a few buildings on our territory. So, of course, we need many, many of generators. So few of them are from Latvia, and it's also very important for us during this time. And also, I forgot to say, but I want to mention that Latvian guests visited our museum in Kyiv, and it's also very important for us. They show support, they demonstrate support, they do not afraid of coming to Kyiv, they are not scared to come to Ukraine and to support us. So we are very proud to have such official representatives of Latvia in our museum.
Well, thank you so much, Alla, for taking time and talking to us. And we can probably say that if there are any Latvians who are listening to us now and are planning to go to Kyiv, they should definitely go also to the War Museum in Ukraine, in Kyiv, and maybe look, ask for Alla, who can do the tour in Latvian, right?
Yeah. So, mēs vienmēr laipni lūcam mūsu Latvijas draugus uz muzeju. Paldies par atbalstu, un es ceru, viss būs uzvaras, viss būs Ukrainā, viss būs labi. Paldies jums, jā. Uzredzēšanos laimīgi, visu labu.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
Paldies Dīvu par interviju, šoreiz ar Allu Grušecku. Lieliski interviju, un ja jūs klausītāji nepārklausījāties, arī gide Kijevā kara muzejā arī runā latviski, tas nebija mākslīgais intelekts, mēs neko te necenšamies maldināt vai apstrādāt vai pārstrādāt, tā kā tā patiešām bija šajā reizē, un jā, nu, pēc šīs intervijas, klausoties interviju, nāk prātā, ka tiešām šie cilvēki kara muzejā, nu, kara muzejas, jā, nu, tāpat mēs Rīgā arī aizējām uz kara muzeju, nu, tur mēs skatāmies par tādiem notikumiem, protams, jo vairāk, kas ir bijuši kaut kad, bet nu šeit dokumentē vēsturi reālajā laikā, kad viss notiek, nu, protams, viena no iespējām ir filmas, mūzika, grāmatas, kur to darīt, bet vēl viena lieta arī ir muzeja, kur to arī reālajā laikā var darīt ar dažādiem eksponātiem. Tie vēl noteikti laika gaitā arī papildināti tiks un mainīsies, taču cerams, ka nu, iespējami drīz jau šajā kara muzejā Kijevā gidī apmeklētājiem par karu Ukrainā varēs tomēr stāstīt kā par kaut ko bijušu, nevis jo projām notiekošu.
Nu jā, katrā ziņā, ja jūs dosieties uz Ukrainu, uz Kīvu, meklējiet šo te milzīgo sievietes statuju, tieši tās pakājē atradīsiet Allas darba vietu, atradīsiet arī pašu Allu, kur tur ir ikdienas. Jāpiebilst tik vien, ka tas nav vienkārši tāda viena muzeja ēka zem šīs lielās statujas, tas ir vesels kompleks, gana liels, un patiesībā pirms Covid, nu, tātad karš, Covid, tad, kad bija pēdējais normālais laiks, tā teikt, kaut cik tas bija pirms Covid, un tad esot šo te muzeju kompleksu gadā apmeklējuši 800 tūkstoši cilvēku, un 55% no tiem esot bijuši ārzemnieki, tā kā šī ir ļoti interesanta vieta pati par sevi, bet šobrīd, kad notiek karš, muzejs piedāvā visu laiku dažādas pagaidu ekspozīcijas un izstādes, kurās var redzēt tiešām unikālas liecības par notiekošo Ukrainā un Ukraiņu cīņu par brīvību. Tā kā noteikti iesaku, un ja jūs tur aizdosieties, noteikti pajautājiet, vai Alla Grušetska ir uz vietas, un ja ir, tad varēsiet aprunāties gan par prātu vētru, gan par Rīgu, gan par to, kas ir redzams Ukrainas kara muzejā. Tas šajā reizē mums arī viss, ja jums šķita interesanti, vai ja jūs zinat kādu, kurš dosies uz Kīvu, tuvākajā laikā noaizsūtiet viņiem saiti uz šo sarunu, uz mūsu šīsdienas epizodi, pielieciet lūdzu tur tos īkšķīšus, zvaigznītes un kas nu kurā platformā ir liekams, lai algoritmi saprot, ka šeit tiek piedāvāts saturs, kuru ir vērts klausīties, un rakstiet mums droši, kā redzam, pēc šodienas ļoti skaists piemērs, kā klausītāju, proti jūsu iesaiste, palīdz veidot mums kopā drošinātāju saturu, un tā tas būs arī turpmāk. Tātad rakstiet mums drošinātāju sēt Latvijas Radio LV, klausieties mūsu ik ceturtdienu jauna epizode visās straumēšanas platformās un Latvijas Radio mobīlajā lietotnē, bet tiem, kuriem straumēšanas formāts ir svešs, iesakiet klausīties Latvijas Radio 1 piekdienu vakaros 6.15, tad mēs ejam arī gaisā tur, tikai nedaudz īsākā formātā, jo mums jāiekļaujas konkrētā laikā.
Visu labu un tiekamies jau nākamnedēļ. Atceramies drošinātājs skaidri un personīgi par karu Ukrainā.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs.